I'm Nick Dearden, and this is Counterpower, the podcast for global solidarity. Today, I'm joined by co-host Seema Saida, advocacy director at JCWI and a trans-border activist with a foothold in France. That's the country whose recent political instability and insurgent radical left is the focus of today's episode. In June 2024, French President Macron announced a snap parliamentary election. Faced with the threat of a far-right victory, a group of left and centre-left parties came together to form an electoral alliance called the New Popular Front. Putting together a shared manifesto for change, the alliance topped the poll, winning more seats than Macron centrist or Le Pen's far-right. Although Macron kept the New Popular Front out of power, preferring instability under successive weak administrations to a left-wing government, the moment captured the imagination of many progressives across Europe. It is possible for the left to come together and win. Since that time, things have been less harmonious. The largest bloc is represented by La France Insoumise, or France Unbowed, led by Jean-Luc Mélenchon. But the party is now facing unprecedented attempts to marginalise and delegitimise it, including most recently by trying to blame the assassination of a young far-right activist on members of the party. Today, we're delighted to be talking to Daniel Le Bono, a La France Insoumise deputy in the National Assembly, who will tell us about what the situation is now and explain what we can learn here from France's experience.
So Danielle, a really warm welcome to you. Welcome to this show. What's bringing you to London?
Well, I'm very pleased to be here and to take part in this podcast. Initially, I was invited on Thursday by the Stop the War Coalition in Brighton to attend a meeting, which I wasn't able to attend physically because of some parliamentary rescheduling. We may talk about it. We had a bill, very dangerous bill that we managed to get withdrawn. But I wanted to come anyway, so I will have a meeting about a motion that I've written about the fight against anti-Semitism, and also take part in a meeting about imperialism and with the French comrades here.
Brilliant. So when you're talking about that dangerous bill, are you referring to the Loi Yadan?
Yes, that was the bill that the government and the Macronists tried to push forward. And there was a massive mobilization against it. Over 700,000 people who signed a petition on the site of the National Assembly in order to oppose it. And I think due to the pressure, the even the Macronist coalition started to crumble because one of the group decided to withdraw his support for the bill, and it looked like nobody wanted really to vote for it. So they withdrew it and saying that they will redraft something, the government will redraft it, and may put it to debate late June, but it was a definitive victory to have this bill withdrawn because it was basically a bill that was weaponizing the fight against anti-Semitism. The title of the bill was to fight against a new form of anti-Semitism, but it was using the anti-terrorist law in order to censor the people supporting the Palestinians and opposing the genocide in Gaza. And it's been part of this big repressive state offensive against the support for Palestinians and trying to use the fight, the necessary fight against anti-Semitism in order to label it, to criminalize people in order to protect the state of Israel and the Netanyahu governments.
So. It's so similar, isn't it, to what's been happening here with the attempt to ban Palestine Action as a terrorist organization? Yeah.
Exactly. We're seeing this rise in real repression, real stamping down on freedom of speech, whilst the far right claims that it's the left and progressive movements who are attacking freedom of speech. And that's really what we're wanting to discuss here today as well, with the rise of La France Insoumise and an insurgent left in France. For many decades, what we've been documenting politically is the rise of fascist parties and the far right, like Le Pen's National Rassemblement, which used to be the National Front, for people who aren't aware that they renamed themselves in an attempt to de-diabolize, so to try and make them more respectable. And over the decades, that party has been gaining in votes and votes and becoming even more mainstream. And so what there was a lot of fear that perhaps Le Pen's party could even win the last parliamentary elections, because they were obviously called as a off the back of the European elections where they did quite well. And I think they had the most votes. And Macron thought, OK, I'm going to do a power play here and people will be afraid of them, so this will hold up my power. But actually, that's not what happened in the recent election. Do you think that there's a real danger of Le Pen's party going to victory in France? And what do you think gave rise to their increasing popularity?
Yes, there is a danger, because the ruling class in France is ready to get the fascists in power. This is a plan. This is their plan. We've seen in the recent weeks how they've been paving the way for Jordan Bardella, who is the presumptive candidate for the presidential election since Marine Le Pen, she was the previous presidential election, shouldn't be able to be a candidate, because she was condemned. She had a sentence to not being able to be a candidate, to stand for the elections. And I think she made an appeal, and the result would be in July. So they're like preparing to have Bardella be the candidate, and he's been in front of People's Magazine and to shape him into this very attractive guy, young guy who isn't named Le Pen, which still has some negative weight on it. So and he's very much aligned with the right wing, not fascist but right wing, and he could be the link between, you know, the fascists and the so-called traditional right-wing parties, and is supported by people like Bolloré, who is a billionaire and who owns channels and TV channels and a lot of media, and is getting more and more media under his power. And what happened back in 2024 is basically it's been revealed by media, by press articles, is that Emmanuel Macron wanted the far right to win. He was calling his own candidates at the snap election. He called, he told them not to step down when facing, you know, when the far right was first after the first right, you know, because it's two round elections in France, and there's this tradition which was called the Republican blockade or against the far right when faced with far-right candidates who came first, the other non-fascists would oppose him. And so there's this tradition. But Macron actually called his candidate not to do that. So it was very the plan that was defeated by the people. And I think that's also something important, that no matter how much, you know, the Macron policy, neoliberal policy, austerity measures have helped the far right to rise and gain more and more power, and you had the austerity policies and the xenophobic and racist policy that has been made over the years, and it's the perfect, you know, road for the fascists. But no matter what, there's been anti-fascist movements, and people just say no, we don't want the far right to win, and that's how we managed to win back in 2024.
Totally. And he broke the cordon sanitaire between working with fascists and the far right, because he passed his immigration law with the votes of the National Rassemblement, and even some of his own deputies in his own party didn't support that law. So that's the shift of how the neoliberal centre is actually welcoming the far right into power.
Danielle, the new Popular Front is a coalition of different parties, but within that, if I'm not wrong, La France Insoumise has the most deputies and won the biggest vote. Could you explain a little bit? There's lots of political parties in France, and it can be confusing to look at it from a distance. Could you explain a little bit about what's different about France Unbowed, and what brought you to the party in the first place?
Oh, okay, it's a long story, but basically, La France Insoumise was born out of this anti-neoliberal movement in the early 2000s, and this wave of anti-capitalist demonstrations, and very much very internationalist, and you know, with the rallying cry, "Never Europe is possible." I was part of this movement, and that's how I got involved into political activism. And in France, it coalesced around the referendum against the European Constitutional Treaty. That was a very defining moment, because that was the time that we managed to oppose this treaty, and there was this coalition of political parties. It was ranging from the far left, which I was part of at the time, and up to the part of the Socialist Party at the time. They were a minority at the time, and there was this guy called Jean-Luc Mélenchon who was part of the Socialist Party. But he broke away and he campaigned with anti-capitalist group, with ATTAC, the NGO, with also trade unionists. So we managed to build this anti-neoliberal left, and we shifted the mood at the time. It was back in 2005. It's a really defining moment, because it showed that we could win. We could win a majority of the people in France, and that's fueled a lot of debate at the time. And then fast forward 2009, when Jean-Luc Mélenchon left the Socialist Party and then started this new coalition with the Communist Party called the Left Front at the time. And I joined their coalition. And he was the candidate for the presidential election in 2012, sorry, and he got 11% of the votes, and then we built this dynamics into a wider movement that managed to support his candidacy 5 years later as La France Insoumise. That's how we started the movement. We had a disagreement with the Communist Party at the time, because it was aligned with the Socialist Party. Anyway, that's part of the internal debate. But then 2017, that was the candidate, the presidential election, when Jean-Luc Mélenchon got 19%. Which showed, and at the time, it's a defining moment, because it showed that on the left, the broad left, were ranging from the Socialist Party, which is more like Labour Party here, and there was the Communist Party at the time, and the Green, and some far left organization like the NPA with Besancenot and stuff, but the center of the left was now on the radical side, and that was confirmed in 2022. So that's how our movement came to be. It was founded like 10 years ago, and I think it's the result of those years of anti-neoliberal campaigning, and also what changed also is the way we embrace the anti-racism. And also the past 2 years was the way we stood strong on international solidarity and support for Palestine. And that's really put us apart from the center left and other party, because we were targeted by the state and we've been targeted. But it showed people that we were like the real deal, because we no matter what they said about us, we were like proud anti-fascist and anti-imperialist movement.
And it was really brilliant, because I was living in France for a period of 2 years in Marseille during the European election campaign, and we saw how La France Insoumise put Rima Hassan, a really vocal, brilliant Palestinian campaigner for Palestinian rights and resistance, as a candidate, and she was elected. And this has really completely changed the shape of discourse as well on the political level, because she brings a very, very radical, I would say what she's saying is normal, but to our current level of discourse, a very radical viewpoint, and that's really challenging some of the received and usual ways that Palestine is talked about, and putting Palestinian voices and agency at the forefront. And as someone who's come from Britain to France, I did notice that there is a lot less representation of racialized people in the political and media space. And I can see that that's really changing, partly due to what La France Insoumise is doing as well. And it's obviously important that that representation is not tokenistic. So here in the UK, we've had lots of representation, but we're also seeing tokenization, where our Home Secretary now is leading one of the most, in my view, fascistic assaults on migrants' rights in the country. But I want to move to our next question. There's so much to unpack here. But I think what's really important about what you've mentioned is how your huge political project was born with social movement organizations, civil society, trade unions. And as someone who is quite active in social movement spaces, there's always this critique that comes to party politics from the movement base, which says, will your politics end up being co-opted? How do we engage with this liberal bourgeois democratic framework that will push, that can push us into less radical positions? And how do we maintain that movement? So would it be possible if you can tell us a bit more about how your project for change works with civil society movements and unions?
I mean, there's a lot of debates. It's always been, and it wasn't easy over the past, I would say, 20 years, because when I was talking about back in the 2000s, this, the anti-capitalist movement with attack, there was always already those discussions about the autonomy, what we called in France, debate about autonomy of the social movement towards politics. And there's this long tradition of, for instance, trade unionists, La Charte d'Amiens, which is called the Amiens Charter back in the 19th century. Early 20th century, that separated the, you know, party politics and trade unionism. But what's always missed is that back in the days, they said that trade unionism was a revolutionary one. That was the way to the revolution. That's why they didn't need the party, because the trade union was about to do the revolution. So in France, we got a lot of debate about that. But what I think made it possible for us to succeed in a way, in some part, with our relationship with social movements, is first our program, our platform, political platform, because that's what glue us together. That's really the most important thing for us. The program, L'Avenir en Commun. And it's basically, it's been written.
What does that mean, l'avenir en commun?
It's been the future in common.
Amazing. It's great to have the vision of what will
what
society
we want.
Look
yeah.
like.
Yeah. It's the idea. And it's basically, we wrote it with people from the social movements. And we just talk with them. We made a lot of meetings, and it was basically their demands, most of the social movement demands. And that's the reason why at every election, our platform is said to be the most in line with social movements and NGOs. And we always have the best notes. I don't know if you say notes, but they always say that our they are 100% they 100% agree with what you say. So I think that's what makes it very a strong relationship with them. And also the way we got, when we first got elected, there was only 17 of us at National Assembly back in 2017. And also, as I said, the program, the political platform is central for us. And we tried to transform and put our program into bills and laws and stuff like that. And we've always been from the very start working with social movement while we were in parliament. And we really were always debating whenever there was a bill that was debated, and we worked with them. So we build, I think, a strong relationship with social movement through this, and also being part of the movements and helping and being, I think, very central in building movements, and especially over the past 3 years now, the support for Palestine movement, where we've been very active, but also during the pension reform in 2023, it was our rank and file activists, people on the ground from La France Insoumise, who were really all over the country supporting social movements. So I think that's how we build a stronger relationship with social civil society and social movements.
Amazing.
Great. I remember when the New Popular Front was formed, and it seemed really refreshing and really what we needed. Very different from what was happening here. Of course, it drew on the French experience of fighting fascism in the 1930s, but nonetheless, we haven't seen anything like that in Britain. And so it felt like something we really needed to learn from. I know that the experience in practice of the New Popular Front has been difficult, mm-hmm. And so I wonder if you could just update the audience on where the coalition is now. Is it functioning as a coalition at the moment even?
Unfortunately, I would say the coalition isn't really working anymore, because what happened over the past year and a half is that the Socialist Party decided to back the government. We had a government that was actually illegal, because illegitimate government since 2024. So we should have been called to form the government. We were the biggest coalition in parliament, and Emmanuel Macron just said no, and yeah, like that. And what happened that so we opposed the government, and we put forward motion of I would say it's equivalent of no confidence motions. We managed to push out the first one, Barnier, that was the first prime minister Macron called. And then after that, I think under the pressure of François Hollande, who managed to sneak in to the coalition. He's the former president that gave birth to Macron and the Macronism, actually, because Macron was part of his government before he got elected in 2017. And François Hollande wasn't able to be a candidate in 2017 because he had such a bad during the time he was a president, he did so bad that he couldn't even, be a candidate again, which is really a big failure for him. And so for a couple of years, we got rid of him, and we managed to try to rebuild the left. And then we had the first coalition we built was in 2022, called the NUPES, which was already coalition with those different forces. And then when the snap election happened, we shaped it. And then that's when François Hollande decided to get back into the game and then sneak into, became a candidate, and he got elected thanks to the New Popular Front. But with another idea of what should happen, which is basically his big dream is to build this center-left, center-right party. And back when he was a president, he already at this ID is very much in line with, you know, at the time, the some kind of Blairites left and the kind of the Clintonism is part of this, you know, third way generation of social democrats that's...
Yes, and there's this, is this related to the alliance with Raphael Glucksmann and at the European elections?
You know, the Socialist Party, you know, abandoned social democracy and now is, you know, social neoliberal kind of thing. But it's really what we experience is that the leadership really decided to save the Macron government, was which was led at the time by Bayrou, and they didn't support a motion of no confidence. And for the past year and a half, they basically supported the government, which is in a way means that they were they like betrayed the political platform and the coalition. They got elected in. And that's what broke the New Popular Front. But it's important to say also that for most of the votes we had, and even the motion of no confidence we put forward, was voted by the Green and the Communist Party. So that those are the people who we actually still work with. And we vote the same, you know, against the government, and we support each other's bills and stuff like that. So apart from the Socialist Party, we still got this in the parliament, this coalition that works. And I think that's something we are trying to get back together for next year. Presidential election.
Right, let's take a break there. When we come back, we'll be talking about the recent elections in France and what this means for the presidential elections next year.
Hi there, I'm Nick Dearden from Global Justice Now, and I've got a small request. Counterpower isn't just about conversation, as great as that is. It's about turning ideas into action and building real community power. That's why we have a simple pledge to you, our audience. On every single episode, we'll leave you with something that you can do, big or small, to catalyse change. Whether it's the latest big ideas or the movements you need to check out, you'll find them on Counterpower. But to do all of this, we need your help to launch the project. We know it's got great promise, but to get it off the ground, we need your support. We're aiming to raise £8,000 to kick off this exciting project. To support our launch, please go to the crowdfunder linked in the show notes. And one more thing, whatever you do, don't forget to subscribe, like, and follow so that you never miss an episode. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review.
Danielle, a few weeks ago, I read about the killing of this young far-right activist. It wasn't well reported here, but there's now been an attempt to pin this on members of La France Insoumise, even a deputy, I believe. And I have to be honest, it kind of frightened me and kind of brought to mind the Republic, the politics of Weimar Germany in some ways. I've since learned that actually political violence in France is unfortunately not unusual and often perpetrated by the far right, of course. Mm-hmm. But maybe you could explain for listeners what happened there and what kind of crackdown there's been on your party since then.
Mm-hmm. Yes, what happened, it's important also first to say that it's been years and even decades that the far right has been in Lyon, in this city, in some part of the city, has been attacking left-wing people, has been attacking immigrants, has been attacking people of color, and really terrorizing entire areas in this in this city specifically.
They burnt down an anarchist shop.
And really, you got very identitaire, like very ultra right. It's not just far right, ultra right groups. They got clubs. They train militarily and stuff like that. Which then, in reaction to that, there's a strong anti-fascist left that was built, and one of the groups that organized it is called La Jeune Garde, the Young Guard, and they've been doing very good job and fighting back and organizing, protecting demonstrations, protecting people in the street, and managing to get some of the clubs closed by the justice decision. So they've been doing actual anti-fascist work, and always organized and always in a way to protect our movements. And one of our MP is from this organization, La Jeune Garde, Raphaël Arnaud. He's been elected in 2024, and he's a great comrade.
Brilliant. He came to the UK at a transnational anti-Islamophobia conference that we were running, and was one of the few people who engaged with us as an elected politician, even amongst the UK.
And he's been very active. And what happened a couple of months ago is there was actually a meeting at one of the university with Rima Hassan. It was about Palestine, and so there was we had safety measures in places, and we know that there's a group of far right so-called feminists called Nemesis, which always try to create incidents, and they come to left demonstrations, and they held very racist and anti-immigrant slogans, and blaming immigrants for sexual violence and stuff like that. And so, and their whole deal is to try to videotape it and then put it on social media. And they were and what has been known since then is that they were really coordinating with those far-right groups in order for them to try to create problems, and then the far-right groups will come and fight with the anti-fascists. So that's what happened. It was very far away for the meeting when that Rima Hassan attended, so there was nothing really close to this area. She had nothing to do with that. But there was those skirmishes, and it happens regularly in Lyon, especially because of the far-right, who planned to always target left-wing events. And during those street fights, one of the far-right activists got beaten up and he died after a couple of hours because he didn't want to go to the hospital, so he walked for a long distance, and then he died of those due to the fight that happened. And in the next hours, the far right group started to say one of our own got killed by LFE, and they started to spread all those rumors. And what happened is that immediately the media just started to spread fake news about, and they only heard this group Nemesis, this anti-feminist far-right group, a version of the events, and so they immediately targeted us. They started targeting Rima Hassan, and then they started targeted Raphaël Arnaud and La Jeune Garde, and it's been for days, witch hunt. Literally, and it just showed how easily, the entire state apparatus also took part in it, because also, as has been revealed, thanks to left alternative media, who showed new evidence, new videos, and it's been said that the intelligence services were actually monitoring the whole event. So they actually let everything happen. They knew what was going on, and so you get this very problematic police non-action to prevent the fight happening. They could have done that. And it created this mass hysteria that it's not an hysteria because it's a really politically designed in order. It was a way to for the far right and for the government to target us and to say, okay, now the anti-fascists are the violent one and are the problematic one. And, you know, as you said, it really reminded at the very time there's this French historian called Johan Chapoutot who wrote this book, Les Irresponsables, the irresponsible one, when he talked about what happened during the Weimar Republic and the way the fascists used every street fight and stuff like that to blame the left and stuff like that. And it was literally what happened during those days. There was death threats against us and especially against Raphael. And it went to the point where the president of the National Assembly decided, it was asked by some of the far-right group at the National Assembly, but they agreed to do a minute of silence for this guy. That they knew was actually a neo-Nazi. It wasn't just the far right. It was neo-Nazi. It was a supporter of Hitler. It was like, and they first portrayed him as like this young Catholic guy who was helping, you know, this women's group, and he was a neo-Nazi. And it's such a shame for the National Assembly that you get 1 minute of silence, which is something that you hardly do only when a soldier got killed in military war and stuff like that for a neo-Nazi.
Totally. And this is happening here in the UK as well, where we're seeing the liberal institutionalization of fascism and mainstreaming. Essentially, that's what it is, because this is a liberal normalizing a fascist in this action. And here, the British state is also using incidents of fascist violence to then repress anti-fascists.
Yes,
you'll see that there'll be people, fascists mobilising in the streets in places like Manchester, where they'll attack anti-fascists and it's the anti-fascists who are then arrested by the police. That's so this is happening here. And of course, I think there's a lot that we can go into it, but there's also these battles that are happening on the ground, which are really important in terms of we need to build our movements to defend ourselves against this violence. We have to do that. And at the same time, LFE is doing the electoral battle. So you recently had the council elections, municipality elections. How did those go? How did the far right do? What's the balance of power? And what does that mean for the presidential election that's coming up?
Yeah, well, that was the atmosphere was very heavy because the death of this young neo-Nazi guy was happening right at the time of the campaign, and as I said, it was we reached new level of violence, political violence against us. As I said, some of our candidates got their headquarters attacked. Some of them get threatened, physically threatened, and stuff like that. So it was very, very hard for us. But the results showed that I think a lot of people didn't get influenced by that. Although it was very also difficult campaign because part of the left or center left, and let's say the Socialist Party or the, like, as I say, it's more like the Labour Party or the right of the Labour Party, was also targeting us and saying, like, you are violent and because you speak very loud and on stuff like that, that's inside violence, like. And when the result came on the first round of the local election, it was the big surprise was the breakthrough we had because we won. We won over 1,000 new councillors. And it's important to know that we only a movement that was created 10 years ago. And our over-organization of like 40, 50, 100 years, you know, of existence. So it was very a breakthrough. And I think everybody was surprised by how many win we got. Especially we won at the first round of the election, Saint-Denis, which is the second biggest city in the Parisian region after Paris. And we got also in the north a city like Roubaix and a lot of, I think we had a dozen mayor now, a new mayor, and as I say, over 1,000 councillors. So it showed that despite the massive propaganda against us, we managed to get people to vote for us. And people actually, a lot of people said, okay, we want to vote for you because of also what is happening, because we want to show support and because you held the line of anti-fascism and you did, and you actually didn't back down because there was such a pressure to say, to put blame on anti-fascists and stuff like that. And people were saying, okay, you need the support. And people came during our campaign meetings and said, like, we want to show support. So it's a good result for us. And it will change locally because we want to push things locally in order to help people and to be the voice of the people into the local council. I think also the way those run will be different because usually people say that, oh, on local level, you don't do real politics and you just manage. And I think we have a lot of things to do to change that, to say it is political. And you know, whether you get a good cleaning services locally or school running good or stuff like that, it is political. So that's this side of the result. But also it shows that we got a good dynamics going on for next year elections, because that's the big political moment that will happen in
for,
a year
for France and the whole of Europe. Yeah. I think. Yeah. Okay, so let's take a break there, and we'll be back to talk about the challenges facing Europe and where Danielle finds hope.
Hello, my name is Elena Ivanova, and I am part of Another Europe is Possible's National Committee. Another Europe is Possible is a democratic movement owned by its members. We know that the political and economic systems we live in are failing people, and so we seek to transform them from below with solidarity in mind. We fight the global authoritarian turn and the climate crisis by building material links of solidarity with allies, movements and organizations across borders, because we know we are united in fighting these challenges. Another Europe is Possible believes in a real functioning democratic system that gives each one of us a voice. We see the threat from corporate takeover of institutions and the influence of dirty money across our politics. We also see the disillusion that this breeds in people and their turn to far-right populist explanations for the illnesses that plague our society. Our answer is solidarity, real democracy, transforming Europe from below. We believe in free movement for all, and we put forward the political arguments for it. We believe in votes that matter and that count for each one of us. We believe in working with allies across borders to face the challenges together. Another Europe is Possible was founded as a left-wing anti-Brexit campaign during the referendum. And now we are seeing the politics that we warned about rule. We're also seeing the Europe that we still want to have tight links to and a progressive bond with not facing up to the challenges of the day. We see our leaders here in the UK and European leaders across the continent bowing down to Donald Trump, to Netanyahu, to Putin, to the strong men of today. This is not the Europe we want. We want a transformed Europe, a transformed continent in a transformed world, built on solidarity, on justice for all. If you share our vision, then join us. Become a member of Another Europe is Possible. Take part in events, online and in person, in campaigns for migrants' rights, for more democracy, for a real democracy.
all of Europe is facing similar dynamics. Also globally, we look at somewhere like India, where we have a fascist party in power. We look at Latin America. This is a global issue. But there are specific national characteristics as well across Europe. Another Europe is Possible, one of the organizations hosting this podcast, was fiercely opposed to Brexit and that Brexit movement. But there's obviously very significant problems with the European Union itself, which is moving towards the right. And looking today, especially at how the European Union has failed to stand up in any meaningful way to Trump. They've abandoned the pretense of international law when it comes to Palestine. Of course, there's a colonial heritage in that, which there's almost no acknowledgement of. So where do you see the hope in Europe now?
I think the hope in Europe, like everywhere else, in the people, really. Because when you see the disconnect between what the government and the leadership is doing and what the people are asking them to do, you had many instances. I think the only country which is the exception may be Spain, which is, I don't know, I'm sure there are specific reasons why, but I think it should also... Because the movement there, also anti-war and the support for Palestine, also has always been historically very strong. And I think that's also a result of that pushed the government to have a good stand. But when you think, for instance, on a totally different side, even Italy, the way Meloni is now distancing herself is because there's such an incredible anti-war movement in Italy. There's always been. And that's maybe what's left of the left now, this anti-war and support for Palestine. And that's pushed even the fascist, neo-fascist Meloni to distance herself. There was a general strike. There was massive demonstration. And what we managed to do, for instance, with the petition that is calling to uphold the trade agreement between the EU and Israel.
To cancel it,
To cancel it. And it's now over a million signature all over the Europe, show that there's this strong opposition in every country against the war, against aligning with Trump imperialist assault on Iran, against Israel genocides, but also against austerity. Because I think I've been, as I said, involved in political activism since the 2000s and this wave of anti-capitalist movement. And I think actually the neoliberal agenda never got the consent of the people. It was never like a mass agreement from the people. And that's, I think that's a reason why those ruling class are using more and more authoritarian policies in order to force this neoliberal agenda on the people, because they don't know how to think outside of it, especially the EU elite. Von der Leyen and co don't know how what to do. They are like paralyzed because the way the world is shifting and the way Trump is reshaping the entire economic dynamics. So it shows that their utter inadequacy and that there's an alternative that is needed, and people are really we are at a time, I think, more and more people all over Europe are searching for a way out, especially seeing how the US are led more and more to the right, to the far right, and seeing the silence of the EU elite and saying like, okay, this is our leadership in a time of such dangerous time. So I think I see the way I in those social movements, in the fact that people still don't believe in the promises. Very few promises of the neoliberal agenda, or the idea that there's no alternative, and that's, I mean, from my experience in France and what I see in other countries, that's the way forward.
And this 1 million person petition, this is a European citizens initiative, which is an instrument, one of the few democratizing instruments in the European Union's institutional framework, which allows people to show their actual views. But after that, I guess there's a question about how that's implemented.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think
so
this,
we need to keep putting them under pressure in order to have the debate at the European level, and then to enact, you know, to launch the process. Of course, it's not like the most direct way to push. I think that comes from within each country, and to put every government, you know, and ask accountability from them and what's happening in Gaza, especially. But I think with the crisis of the cost of living and more and more what's happening in Iran is impacting economically and will have social consequences here. We have to link, you know, the consequences, and that's what imperialism is, to impose a new world agenda, and that causes a lot of shock throughout the entire economic system and social fabrics of a lot of societies. So, and I think it's all the more important because more and more you got European government that are turning to try to rebuild themselves with the military agenda, and they are like raising their military spending, and there's no way people are gonna accept to fund wars rather than the social security, or we have to build on that. I think this content that is growing.
Thank you. And finally, again on international policy, I think our movements have been fairly united on the question of Palestine, the genocide in Gaza, and maybe our attitude towards the Middle East in general. But there's many other divisions over Ukraine, for example, over our attitude towards the European Union. Do you have any lessons for us from the France Insoumise in terms of how you manage those tensions and build a genuine internationalism from below?
Hola, I don't think I could give lessons. I mean, we've learned a lot from what has been happening in Europe. We've learned a lot from the Greek experience during the Syriza governments. We've learned a lot from you guys during the time when Labour was led by Corbyn, and how this project got smashed from within, and also I would say what we managed to do with the New Popular Front, and we've always been very focused on, I'd say, the platform, political platform, the program for us is the most important. And although we had different views on how to deal with, for instance, the war in Ukraine, we all opposed the invasion, but we, La France Insoumise, were more like saying that we have to find a diplomatic solution rather than, you know, push for the war to continue. We're more for like saying that we need to have a diplomatic solution. There's no way out of this situation through war, and it's only causing more and more disaster for Ukrainian people first, and also the Russian people anyway. So, but we managed to get together and have, I think, a strong platform on this issue and say, okay, what we all agree, the invasion has to be stopped, and we oppose the invasion, and here are the things that we could put forward and the demands we're putting together. So I think it's possible to find, you know, common grounds. We have, I mean, 90% of what we agree on many issues, and so what we learn is that we need to build the movement where there's the most I would say living For instance, what I say, we at La France Insoumise, we very much focus on how we get the youth more engaged into politics, and especially the working class people and people of immigrant descent and stuff like that, because they are the most targeted by those policies, and those are the ones who abstain most in the elections, although they have all the reason to, you know, fight back and support us. So we've been very much saying that we have to try and reach out those people, because in 2024, what happened is that those are the people who actually came in droves to vote against the far right, because it was about their very existence for you know, black and brown people in France, Muslim people in France. The danger of the far right getting into power is something very, it's not in theory, it's something very concrete, and when they came to vote, we actually won, and I think it's that why this strategy to say, okay, we have to reach out to them specifically, and that will give us the impulse and what we need to win. So
Perfect. Thank you. One of the things that's really worried me in recent years is the nationalists have been better internationalists than we have been on the left. We need to learn from each other rapidly. Mm-hmm. And that's what you started off your last question saying. And you have given us a huge amount to learn from today. So I want to really thank you for joining
thank
us.
You.
And let's keep working together.
Thank you. It was brilliant. So lovely to hear all your ideas and so many ideas that are now ruminating in my mind from what you've said.
Thanks for having me.
So that's all we've got time for today. I hope you've enjoyed it. Counterpower is produced by Another Europe is Possible, Global Justice Now and the Stop Trump Coalition. Our aim is to bring together experts and activists to talk about global justice and inspire you, our audience, to take action. So if you don't know about our networks and organisations, look us up. Get involved. There's plenty to do. And remember, you can help Counterpower keep going by hitting the link to the show notes for our crowdfunder. Don't forget to like, subscribe and follow Counterpower. Maybe even leave us a nice review. We'll see you again soon.